that's why so many people want to go back to the office, because it's so freaking hard to do online. People are not built as fully asynchronous creatures. We enjoy synchronous conversations. And it was super hard to engage participants, right? They were sitting there, a lot of them with video off. People weren't really getting used to that at that time, right? To facilitate something, you need to make sure that you engage people. Then make sure that you interact with them and that everyone interacts. It's very hard to get engagement and interactivity from people online.
Today on the Future Work Podcast, my guest is meeting facilitation guru Jacob Knutsen, the founder and CEO of Butter. Jacob founded Butter, an online meeting and workshop platform, after being frustrated by overly complex and uninspiring alternatives. In this episode, we discuss the power of synchronous moments, how to facilitate online meetings better, and why we don't need an office. So let's dive in. So the one thing I'm really curious about, you're a master facilitator. You know how to run workshops really well. Then suddenly you had to do it online. What do you see as the main thing that's wrong with virtual meetings and especially with virtual collaboration?
Yeah, good question. Overall, the problem that's wrong with virtual meetings is that they're not collaborative by default. They're often very, either they're one way or they are, you know, one person talks, then another person talks, then another person talks. There's no built-in collaboration. So to make those more collaborative, you need to actively facilitate them.
Yeah.
And that's the big problem with online collaboration, is that it's freaking hard to facilitate. And again, I always hammer down on those two different challenges when it comes to facilitation. To facilitate something, you need to make sure that you engage people, that make sure that you interact with them and that everyone interacts. It's very hard to get engagement and interactivity from people online. And that kind of touches on the other part, because the only way you can really do that is by utilizing a lot of different tools that are digital first, like whiteboarding tools like Miro, or polling tools like Mentimeter, Breakouts, all of these things. But those things are just super, super difficult to do in a lot of the common video conferencing tools. That's the things that I see that's very, very difficult in virtual collaboration today.
And that's typically what people complain about too, right? That like, hey, I'm having this like online meeting, but people don't want to turn their camera on and I don't know if they're paying attention. I'm like, yeah, well, probably in your meetings pre-COVID, people were not paying attention either, but no. You know, at least you could see it and you could see when people are kind of switching off.
Exactly. And you had way better. And I think that kind of touches on the third thing, which is you had a way better feel of the room when you're in a physical space, right? You've got all those.
Because you get that feedback.
You get that instant feedback and you've got all those intuitions that have been developed literally over millennia, right?
One of the things that I think now, a couple of years into it, at least some of us have discovered, is that it's really important, and it sounds kind of bad, but it's really important to have ground rules and to set ground rules for when you have meetings so that you can make the most out of them. I always call Priya Parker's book, The Art of Gathering, I always call it our Bible, because I think that, like, you know, way before all of this, she really kind of codified, you know, what does it take to bring a group of people together and to make that a successful gathering that people feel is really valuable and they want to engage in it. So what are some of the things that, as a master facilitator yourself, but also as you're building a product and getting other people to become great facilitators of online collaboration and online meetings, what are some things that they should be thinking about when it comes to running, you know, great remote sessions?
Really good question, Dan. I always refer to the fact that it's not just the meeting itself. Like, there's both a before the meeting and during and then after the session. Meeting or session, if whatever you want to call it. And on each of those areas, there's particular things that you need to do. And they might seem like a lot of stuff, but, you know, on some meetings, like if it's just a quick stand-up meeting or whatever, then they might be way more lightweight. On big work, like 5-10 hour workshops, they're way more comprehensive. But again, before the session, like, just ensure a clear agenda. Could be a lightweight one if it's a lightweight session. If it's way more fleshed out session, then you need more, of course. But ensure that there's some kind of agenda. Ensure that there are clear goals and takeaways that you want from the session. Clear roles and responsibilities for people. Make sure that you've distributed all the pre-reads and people have actually read it if it's relevant, right? And again, it depends a lot on the size of the session, but there's always, like, even in some of the more lightweight sessions, there's always a little pre-read. Maybe it's just a half page, or maybe it's just a few bullet points, right? But it's always there, right? So people are on the same page when you go into the session. You don't need to spend a ton of time doing, you know, one-to-many communication on whatever's going on, right? during the session, right, it's about sticking to these things that you've established before, of course, like, so stick to the agenda, but again, don't do it too rigidly, right? And that's where the whole, you know, facilitation comes into play, like active facilitation throughout the session. You need to be able to feel like how, always have the final goals in mind, but, you know, move the conversation towards those goals where, depending on wherever the conversation is at any given time. So stick to the agenda, but be okay to move kind of into a few different ways and jump over a few spots if you already kind of feel that you've covered those things. And then, you know, recap it throughout there and make sure that everyone's agreed on whatever's happened in there. And that kind of goes into the after part, right? I mean, so often I see, you know, workshops, trainings, but also just normal meetings. I see people talking about stuff and then stuff just not get done afterwards. It might be the best meeting ever, but it's not anchored into the organization afterwards, right? So make sure that the recap is there. Make sure that that notes and takeaways from the sessions there, and then make sure that they are actually implemented, that there's some kind of structured follow-up set up already right after the meeting has taken place. So those are some of the ground rules that I always think about, like the whole before, during, after, and just making sure that everything's structured throughout the entire way.
But this sounds almost like too obvious and too logical, but I'm sure you see in your day-to-day work that somehow no one sticks to them. What is it that makes us kind of skip all the, you know, we probably know that that's what we should be doing and we don't.
So, but yeah, it sounds logical. It sounds obvious. And I think that that's why it's powerful, right? If something is extremely complex, then nobody's going to do it. But it is reasonably obvious, right? Prepare the meeting, run the meeting, and make sure that the meeting is captured afterwards.
So one of the things that people obviously are really looking at when it comes to the future of work is AI. And it seems like the meeting bots have taken over. So I don't think I've joined a meeting recently where, you know, I don't see at least two or three meeting bots popping up, usually even before the human participants are there, that can then transcribe, that can get a sense of like the sentiment, they can recap, they can give action items. How do you see the role of AI in the future of meetings?
So the way we thought about AI in Butter was very much in the same structure that we think about Butter, namely the before, during, and after structure of the sessions or of the meetings, right? So the AI bots that you refer to, firstly, I think they're an abomination. They should not, like, it's so annoying that they take up a full space. And it's like, what the heck is that bot doing here, right? It's like, I think it could be done in way more subtle ways. But that's very much focused on the post-session stuff, right? I mean, it's capturing, it's transcribing, it's creating action items. And all of that's great. All of that's also pretty straightforward. Like, we do it in Butter, of course. But I think the things...
It's already hilarious how fast things are moving that we now say, like, oh, that's straightforward, you know, a bot that listens in on a video call and then transcribes and says action items. A year ago, we didn't even know it was possible. But yeah, okay.
I know. No, it's crazy. And I actually do think that there's a huge disruption, like, because it's so easy to build the stuff now, right? That I don't know whether you'd call it disruption, but it's just in everything these days. You cannot build a meeting tool without having this in there. It is crazy how quickly things are going. We have also experimented with like pre-meeting AI. So helping AI creating agendas based on, hey, I have these goals and I want this kind of session. Could you please create an agenda for me? I don't think we've really hit the hammer on the nail there yet, but I think that there's a lot of interesting stuff that comes into helping people prepare for sessions. It needs to be balanced, though, because preparing for a session, there's like a lot of your own. And I think that's the danger of having AI automate a ton of stuff, because I think that there's a lot of human processing in, like, when you prepare something, you think about the session, and that helps you get better at the session itself. You're thinking through it, right? And if an AI just writes up an agenda for you, you might think you have an agenda, but you actually don't, because you haven't thought through it. Same thing comes with notes. And that's something I'm a little bit afraid of with myself, with like the AI generated notes post session. Like, when you write your notes after a session, you also process it yourself, and now you don't go through that. I think where it's really interesting is during the session. So during the session, there's so much stuff, like we call it the AI co-facilitator, or at least the concept we call the AI co-facilitator, right? There's so much stuff where you'd need a person in, like, in more complex sessions, where you'd need a person in there to help either push buttons or take notes on particular parts, or, you know, ping people, like help people with technical questions, all of that stuff, right? So there are things like an AI could help open up, like open up a breakout rooms with these and these people there, you know, a quick prompt could help do that. You can have AIs, like we're already seeing the AIs catch you up on a meeting. There's something there. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's been cracked yet really on what to do. AIs helping people with technical problems throughout the session. AIs giving you sentiment analysis real time on what's happening. Yeah. One of the things we're experimenting now with is in breakout rooms. Like breakout rooms is one big way to make sure people are engaged in larger, more complex sessions, because you can take a 30-person session and then break that out in, you know, six groups of five and, you know, have some engagement going on there. Like now we're looking into how to do sentiment analysis across those breakouts, so you know which breakout is interesting to pop into as a facilitator. It's kind of a helping hand, right? So I think there's so much stuff there that can be touched upon, but I don't think we've even scratched the surface on
yeah, that's amazing. Even just you know, outside of the product, right, but just generally that idea of like AI is the most valuable to us if it's a co-pilot or a co-facilitator.
Yes.
So that idea of, you know, when we run online sessions and we do breakout rooms, this is always the difficulty, right? Of like, how are the rooms doing? Are people engaging, yes or no? And then you're going to do like 2 minutes in each room. Obviously, if there's basically a bot there kind of screening the engagement and giving you a heads up of like, hey, this is either an interesting discussion or there's not enough engagement, you should jump into this room. That's like immediate value and can make you 10 times better at giving everyone that feeling of like, wow, this was a great session. So that's exactly. An amazing role.
Exactly. And I mean, take that up and like crank that up to 100, right? And then you suddenly have the educational system, like, you know, all kinds of training sessions where you have huge sessions with, say, hundreds of people in breakout rooms or groups or whatever you want to call them, right?
Yeah.
Where you can have way fewer trainers or teachers or whatever that can actually overview and make sure that you only help the people that truly need help, and you don't need to hover around all the different tables, all the different rooms and figure out which ones need help.
And increase the quality of the overall experience, right? So it's for every person who joins there. Like, that's the thing I keep going back to, that, you know, the Microsoft research, the big annual survey that they do that showed that like meetings were number one and three on the list of things that people hate about work or that stand in the way of them enjoying their work. And then we keep getting dragged into meetings that are just not valuable and they are just a waste of time. So again, if you can increase the value of those meetings and you walk away from it saying that I really got something out of it, that's a huge improvement.
It's a huge improvement, dude.
Another topic that I would love to dive in on. So you talked a lot about, you know, this is solving for synchronous communication. This is solving for in-the-moment collaboration. What are your thoughts about asynchronous? Because it seems in some way that the conversation now a little bit is shifting, at least for more advanced companies and teams, from, okay, we figured out the location part, we figured out the where, now it's about the when. And we just saw that Loom was getting acquired by Atlassian. I'm sure as a founder, you look at those numbers and think, that's nice. But they just got acquired by Atlassian, really with that idea of like, you know, that would be a way for a global team to collaborate and still have the quote-unquote in-person feel, but fully asynchronously. So how are you looking at the async movement?
Oh, I think it's such an interesting question, Dan. So first of all, I think async was very, very big with the remote crowd before COVID. Like most of the companies that were remote before COVID, they had mastered async. They were 95% async when it came to communications. Now, after COVID, like my thesis is that a lot of those companies, they would not function on a wider scale. People are not built as fully asynchronous creatures. We enjoy synchronous conversations. We enjoy, like I'm enjoying this, right? A lot of synchronous like interaction is just extremely powerful, right?
Yeah.
So I think that asynchronous is something that has a tremendous amount of value. And I think in Butter, we do 60 to 70% of our communication async. And that's for one-way communication. Async is very powerful. Like, it's no reason for a lot of people to sit live in a room and listen to someone talking. It can it can always be done asynchronously, where people can consume that information on their own time. I think that asynchronous is really powerful because of the medium. You can write, you can do looms, you can do a lot of these things. So you can make sure that it's even more thoughtful very often than synchronous communication. So there's a lot of power in async. What async doesn't do very well is the stuff that we want to solve for, namely brainstorms, everything where you kind of build on each other's thoughts, you know, where you dive into, oh, that's interesting. And then the other person dives into that. That's interesting, right? You have the quick cadence, if you will, right? That you have in a lot of brainstorm or collaborative sessions. That's something where async doesn't do it very well. That being said, the async part, like as mentioned, the preparation part, super important, right? And there's a big async part for a synchronous session to be successful, but the async part doesn't do that very well. Delivering hard news, difficult news, that's also very bad, or that's also very difficult to do.
Although we've seen we've seen some bad examples.
We've seen some bad examples. Jesus Christ, man. Like, yep. I mean, we all, like, getting a pink slip or getting fired over email, like, that's async bad communication. That's just bad communication. And, or delivering good news, celebrating together, right? That's just also way more powerful when you are able to do that synchronously. So, I mean, those are just some quick examples. I think async is incredibly powerful. I think more people should lean into that already. But I think a lot of people in the remote workspace are already leaning heavily into the async part. I think that people have done that maybe a bit too heavily in places and need to kind of figure out exactly, hey, what kind of communication is this? Should it be async or sync? And then kind of go in the direction that's the most beneficial for the communication.
Yeah, so that it also moves away a bit from functional communication. We can get information across, but maybe that's not always the thing that matters. So I love the idea here of it's really async and sync working together. Even in meeting facilitation, there's an async component in terms of how you prepare and sending the pre-read and getting people up to speed so that in the synchronous part, you can really focus on the communication, the collaboration, the engagement. And maybe if async can take over more of the stuff that's currently still happening in meetings that doesn't have to be a meeting, the kind of famous, this could have been an email or this could have been a Slack. Yes. If it can take over that part of meetings and therefore you only keep a couple of meetings on your agenda that are then facilitated better because people have more time to prepare, people come to the table with more energy and they're looking forward to the session, then that may be the right combination for any company, not just a remote first company, but for any company to communicate better, to collaborate better. And it may just be an alternative to being in the office together.
100%. You put it better than I could.
one of these days. So the newsletter I published this morning, you know, it was kind of one of my rebuttals to the big KPMG study that found that, you know, 64% of CEOs globally now say that by 2026, they predict that people are full-time back in the office, right? And, you know, one of the things that I mentioned is that, like, besides all the obvious reasons, I really don't think that especially those CEOs, which, you know, we can say openly and honestly, they're mostly 50 plus year old white guys. Most of those CEOs, I don't think that they understand with the example of, you know, AI meeting transcribers. I don't think they get how fast the technology is developing. And I kind of mentioned just the example besides Loom of, you know, Facebook's metaverse tools, which, you know, last year we were still laughing and joking and memeing about like Mark Zuckerberg and his metaverse toy and the horrible demo that he gave where he was like in Paris and this and that. But then you see the Lex Friedman example and you're like, wait a minute, this now I'm starting to get a sense for if you could develop that if you leaped from that to that in 1 year, what would that look like by 2026? And so that was kind of like one of my counters of like, I don't think they have any idea of where the technology is going to be just in like 3 years from now. Because if you can put on a pair of goggles or even just on a video screen, see people, it almost looks identical to the person, but they don't have to actually appear on a video screen, which takes a bit of prep, but it takes a bit of, you know, you have to have the mindset for it. This really could be like a huge alternative for true in-office.
No, I agree, man. I'll say that there's kind of two things. Never bet against how quickly technology develops because it's so fast, right? Like what you're saying, right? But I will also say the counter to that is, especially when you're in the technology space, you have a feeling that technology adoption is much faster than it actually is, right? Yeah. I mean, we needed COVID to really shift everyone to video conferencing, even though the technology has been there for years and years, right?
Yeah.
But people have been shifted. I know a lot of big corporates, they're not doing business trips anymore because it's too expensive. Either it's too expensive or the CO2 quotas within the company is prohibited.
Sustainable goals, yeah.
Sustainable, right? And these two are big things that are going to be pushing towards video conferencing in the future.
Yeah.
But again, like, I think a lot of this tech will get there and will get there much faster than we think. But I do think that the general population will, like, it'll take time.
I want to switch gears to you as a manager, because you have been working remotely, building a remote team, I think, across 8 countries now.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that you've learned around, you know, building trust and getting people to be engaged, even if you never see them? Have you seen your team members?
Yes, but only once, all of them. Yeah,
Only one time. And you guys now have been together for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, exactly. Three and a half years now. So yeah, only met them all once. And my co-founder, like, we met our co-founder the first time, I think it was a year and a half, or was it 2 years after founding the company? No, a year and a half after founding the company. Yeah, so yeah.
So what are some things that you've learned about managing, like building a remote team and managing a remote team, that you would pass on to other companies, other leaders?
Yeah, quite a few things. I think the first thing is, like, this whole thing about emotional vulnerability and honesty, transparency, trust. A lot of these things, they flow into each other,
mm-hmm.
but they are absolutely essential for you to build a remote company.
Hmm.
If you do not have trust, then you cannot work remotely with people. You need to trust that they're actually working and that they're mm-hmm. doing the best that they can. It's very hard to build trust without any kind of psychological safety. It's very hard to create psychological safety without also being emotionally vulnerable yourself.
Mm.
So I think that's the number one thing that I've learned over these past years, is just like a very high level of like kind of emotional vulnerability towards your team, and openness and transparency into your own life. That's the best way to ensure that this level of psychological safety is built, which again creates a culture of trust.
Was that a hard transition for you to make? Were you before that, were you like very closed off and suddenly you have to kind of lay it all out?
I'll be honest, it wasn't. I've always been a very emotionally open guy. So it was I think that's one of the reasons one of the things that made me flow into this reasonably naturally. Mm. I do enjoy it, and I do feel that that's the best way. And that's kind of the company I want to build. And same with my co-founders, right? We all agreed that this is a company we want to build. It is a company of high levels of emotional vulnerability, where people can talk about everything and not be judged, right? Because I think that that makes for better people overall, more healthy people overall, and therefore also better workers. So there's a lot of stuff there.
What do you feel about then bringing people together? So you said you saw everyone once. I think I read somewhere that you did a company trip to Malaysia. That was like the one time you guys all saw each other. Like, what did that trip look like? What did you organize for that? And then what came out of it?
Yeah, actually, the one time we all saw each other was in Portugal the year before. I was not at the trip in Malaysia. So that was a regional, like, budget savings and all of that. Again, the whole emotional openness and stuff, it really helps with building it when you're not together, and then it's supercharged when you're then together for a short period of time, right?
Mm.
So that's why it's so important to get together physically when you're a remote team. I think it's also important that when you're together, you don't just have a loose agenda, and you don't just have, you know, leadership speaks to company and shares vision. No, like, you need to work around something, right? So one of the really great things we did when we had our company trip to Malaysia, it was to Penang, we did a hackathon. So, you know, we split people into groups and had them each work on different problems we faced in the company. And it was a pretty intense experience. The groups presented and it was shared. And that's one way that you really bring people close together. I mean, people are working, like, people are used to working together in butter around something, like around work.
Mm-hmm.
And when you then bring them around together physically, it's great to kind of carry that with you, because that's a common purpose. So that really created a ton of camaraderie and focus around people. So
beautiful.
That was a work.
But,
work
but you weren't
something.
There.
I wasn't there, dude. In all fairness, I was having my first kid, so that was why I wasn't there.
Great. Great reason to miss the trip. Did you join in online? Was there like a hybrid working session?
Yep. Yeah, there were.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jacob, this was amazing. I feel like we've picked up so much in terms of working remote and facilitating remote meetings, and especially around collaboration, which I think is still one of those things that people think they have to be in person for. I'm totally convinced that we can do it online now. To conclude the interview, what's a final thought you have about the future of work, and what's something that you wish for how we would work in the future?
Yeah, I think one big thing that's been a lot on my mind lately is this thing about trust. We have a lot of remote workers that's very angry at the 50-plus-year-old white men that want everyone back to the office. I think that we need to make sure that remote workers as well, they work very hard towards showing that you can build this kind of trust, and you don't have those different examples of people working several jobs or whatever when they're remote working, that you can actually have a well-functioning, trustworthy job when you're working remotely. So that's one of the big things that I think we should all work towards.
Absolutely. We should trust each other, and we should trust that we are all good people. Jacob, thank you so much for being on, and we'll make sure to put all the links in the show notes and for people to try out Butter. Thanks so much for being on.
Yay. Thanks so much for having me, Ben.
Today's conversation with Jacob, the CEO and co-founder of Butter, showed me how online meetings may be difficult, but can be done in a highly engaging way that replaces in-office collaboration. So here are a couple of key lessons you can apply today. First of all, the importance of synchronicity. Like Chase Warrington, who was on the podcast before, synchronicity remains important, even for remote teams. Jacob builds on this by saying people thrive in synchronous interactions, which explains the longing for office environments. Find synchronous moments with your team, especially for collaboration, brainstorming, communicating important or difficult news, and celebration. 2. The art and science of active facilitation. Jacob stresses the critical role of active facilitation in virtual collaboration in 3 key moments. One is before the meeting, where you have to establish a concise and clear agenda with clear objectives and desired outcomes, roles and responsibilities, and send this to participants together with other pre-reads. Make sure you prepare well so that the meeting is effective and engaging. The second part is during the session. You should adhere to the agenda while remaining flexible to adjust based on the conversation's flow and emerging priorities, actively facilitating by engaging participants, encouraging interaction, and ensuring that the conversation remains focused. Finally, finish with a real-time recap and an agreement. Summarize the key points and decisions throughout the meeting to ensure alignment. And 3, after the session. Document the meeting's outcomes, including actionable tasks, and distribute them to all participants to ensure accountability and progress. Establish a clear follow-up process to monitor the implementation of decisions, and seek feedback on the meeting's effectiveness to continuously improve them and address any area of concern. And the third point, AI's role in the future of meetings. Looking ahead, AI can revolutionize virtual collaboration. AI's potential includes enhancing real-time engagement as a co-facilitator in meetings, workshops, and breakout rooms. I also like Jacob's reminder that we should not rely on AI too much for agendas and recaps, for example, as writing those are also part of how we internalize the meeting's content. So that's it for today, and join me again in 2 weeks when I speak to Paul J. Zak, the leading thinker on leadership and neuroscience, who wrote the classic HBR article, The Neuroscience of Trust.